Shani. Let's stop from Shani. We'll just do the best that we can for the time that we have. Okay, so we start over here. So we'll see some kapara as a wrong parasha. Wrong parasha. We're up to Shani. Shani, here it is. Today is not my day. Things are just not going my way. Okay, you'll see some mishpitzai zahav. You shall make mishpitzai. What are mishpitzai? Mishpitzai are settings. You shall make for them. You shall make for them. Now, we're dealing over here with making them. This, the end of the samtam, I'm reading the passage before, the samtam is shvei ha'avanim al kisvah levoi. Okay, Avni Zikor Livnei Yisrael Vinas Avni Shemarsim Livnei Hashem Al Shtei Chisefav Lizikorain. Okay, so these are the settings for the Avni, the stones of the Ephod. These are the shoulder stones. The Ephod was a garment which was worn only by the Kohen Gadol. It was worn on his back. Basically, it covered his back. The main portion of the garment of the Ephod was a garment that covered the back portion of the body of the Kohen Gadol. And the garment had two shoulder straps, which came onto the shoulders. And from that came down the choshen. And the shoulder straps had on top of it two stones, the Avnei Shoyam. And on these two stones, it was etched the 12 names of the Shiftei Koh. And these two shoulder stones were put into two gold settings. And that's what it says over here in this word. This is an amazing pasuk. It's a very short pasuk. It's only three words. V'yasitza, you shall make mishpitzois zahav. You shall make two settings of gold for the Avnei Shoyam. These two settings were put on the two shoulder straps that extended from the ephod. So Rashi says, what are the mishpitzois? The short Rashi, miut mishpitzois shtayim. It's Loshen Rabin, which means two. Over here, it does not tell you the purpose of these two settings. Over parashas choshen goy melucha perush. So Rashi says is that the avnei shoyam were connected to the choshen. In other words, the ephod was a very interesting garment, a very unique garment, where basically, like we said before, it covered the back of the body, and it folded over onto the front of the body, but it didn't fold over very much because in the center. The center was the choshen. The choshen was the front, and the choshen was supported by the sides of the ephod, and it was supported on top from the shoulder straps. So the truth is, the ephod and the choshen go together. Because if you don't have the choshen, then the ephod is going to fall off, because the ephod is not going to be secure. It's like it's because there was no shoulder. You don't put your there are no sleeves. On the ephod. The ephod was like a vest with no sleeves. I guess that's it's worse than no sleeves. Think about a vest. You have a three-piece suit, and the three-piece suit has a vest. Now, if you don't, the vest is going to stay on your body because you put your hands through the holes, so it stays on your body. But try to imagine a vest that has nothing on top. It's not going to stay. There's no way to keep the vest fastened on your body. The only way you can keep the vest on your body is in this type of vest where there's nothing on top is the choshen. The choshen was in the front of the body, and this vest had straps, shoulder straps that went up above, and it was secured by the choshen. So it's interesting that when we talk about the Kohen Gadol, he wore eight begadim. So we saw he wore the four regular begadim, and then he wore the me'il. And on top of the meal, he wore an ephod and a choshen and the tzitz. The ephod and the choshen are not really two separate garments. Because when you talk about a garment, if you wear a garment, if you don't wear the garment, okay, so you don't wear the garment. What's the big deal? So you're missing a garment. One garment does not need the other garment. Each garment was independent. However, these two garments were dependent one on another. They're unlike all of the other garments of the Kohen Gadol. All of the garments of the Kohen Gadol, the Kohen Hegit, each one was independent. But the Ephod needed the Choshen to secure itself. And the Choshen was only secured by the Ephod. So these two things, they go together. And therefore Rashi says that what it says over here in this parasha is only a partial explanation, and all of the missing details will be filled in when we come and we discuss the Choshen. Over here it's only going to tell us a portion of the elements of what these shoulder straps and these two gold settings were all about. And whatever is missing here with regard to the ephod will be filled in when we discuss the Choshen, because the truth is, one is incomplete without the other. And what does the Targum say? The Targum on this pasuk says, you'll see some mishpatos of our pasuk says, v'saved miramitzan didahav. A miramitzan. What is the miramitzan? What in the world is that? I have no idea. So here in the Ma'atzari, in Pasuk Yud Gimel, it says, in Pasuk Yud Gimel, no, how could that possibly be? There's nothing. He doesn't say anything about it. Would you believe it? There's nothing here in the Ma'atzari. So we will look at this other Sefer. Maybe we'll get lucky. Maybe it'll tell us something over here. This is Perek Chof Ches, Pasuk Yud Gimel. Perek Chof Ches, Pasuk Yud Gimel. Let's see what he says over here. Perek Yezayin, Perek Chavches, Pasuk Yud Gimel. Okay. V'yosisa mishmasoy zahav, v'saved miramitzan didahav. Okay, so it's mizlogois. What's mizlogois? What does it mean, a mizlog? Mizlogois zahav. I don't know what that word means either. Ki de'el pasuk yidav v'shem Ramban, mishmasoy perushoy moishav kimidas ho'evin umotzion mimenu mizlog. What's a mizlog? Shalosh hashinayim sheyoechazu eso even. A mizlog is a fork. This is amazing. He's translating the word in mishpitzos as a fork. A fork has claws, just like you have a pitchfork. That's what a mizlog. A mizlog is a pitchfork. A pitchfork to take the meat off the mizbeach. And he's saying over here is that this mishmitzah, the setting, we had three prongs. And the three prongs that came forth from this setting, now I'm assuming it covered the stone from the top to keep it in place. But is really that what it means? When you call it a mizlog, maybe what it means is that these three prongs were thrust into the stone itself from the back to hold on to it. When you take a piece of meat, you have a fork, you have dinner, you have a piece of steak, and you have a fork and knife. Hopefully everyone here eats with a fork and knife, right? Hopefully. So when you have a fork and knife, what do? You take the fork and the fork goes around the meat, or you thrust the fork into the meat. How can you do that? You're damaging the meat. The meat, you know, it's bad enough. You take a knife and you slice it. That's not bad enough to slice it. You have to stab it with a fork. The fork has four prongs. I think most of our forks have four prongs. And you thrust the fork into the meat. You're making holes. You're making holes in the meat. How could you do that to a beautiful piece of meat? And then you put it into your mouth. How many teeth do you have in your mouth? 32. Hopefully everyone has 32 teeth. And what do? You chew. And each tooth has how many? Each tooth has a different number of sharp points which chew the meat. Okay, there are a lot. The piece of meat comes in contact with a lot of sharp items in order for it to go through this world in peace. So he's saying over here something very interesting. Never thought of this. You look at the picture books of the mishpatzos. I'm just trying to think back from memory. The picture books always show there are stones and there are. Prongs, there is metal which keeps it in position, which covers it from the top. Things they stick up and it closes in on top. Like how do they put a setting on a diamond? I don't know. I don't look at diamonds too much, but I imagine that there are the setting. The diamond is held in place by metal which goes on top of the diamond and keeps it secure in a unique way. You don't take the prong and make drill a hole into the diamond and stick the prong in, like you take a fork and you stick the fork in to a piece of meat. These metal prongs come on the outside and enclose it. They close in on the stone. But I'm wondering, is that really what it means? Maybe the very fact that we give the time when we were saying that the setting, we like the term with Mishmah, so it's the setting. So we think of a setting in the 21st century. You have a ring, and there's a diamond, and on the diamond is attached, there's a setting which keeps it in place. Maybe that's not what it means. Maybe over here, when it talks about the Avnei Shoyam, if we're calling the setting a fork, a mislog, a pitchfork, maybe this pitchfork was thrust into the back of the stone. They actually drilled a hole in the stone itself in a unique way, where this metal prong, this metal portion, was thrust in it and kept it secure that way. Is that what it means? I don't know. Because over here, that's what I said over here. I'm just saying, okay, Rusha Moshe, this is what I'm going to do. Mizlag, Shalosh Hashinayim, three prongs. There were chains that were connected to cool the mishpat size. They were thrust into the mishpat size. Shall the kaftar ha'ifot? Shall the kaftar ha'ifot? Okay, that's another part. Yesh mishpat size sabatim hem lavoish rabbanim. Ein yitaku bohen shar shalois. Ma yisham shu sham gumay shabohen. Avol hem mizlgoyes kmo shamanu. The mikve hashalashes, the holes of the shalashes, the kasim bohen. Okay, I'm not sure. I really don't know what he means. He's talking about something else over here. Okay, but at least, the very least, we can take away from this. You take away from this over here is the Targum says over here, you shall make over here, Miramitson. And the way over here, he explains in this other sefer called the Targum Menachem, he explains it to mean it was a Miramitson, means a pitchfork. And that now gets us thinking exactly how were these Mishpitzois made to secure in position these two stones. Just because we've been brought up looking at certain pictures of how the Mishkan was made, we know already very, very well that a lot of these pictures are very, very nice, but they don't represent all of the opinions. And it's very likely that when Mashiach will come, we'll see everything for real. Who knows? There may be things that may be totally, totally different than what we are accustomed to. Just over here to keep in mind that we don't really talk about this, the Mishpatis. I once heard a very chash barav. He was saying that whenever someone hears about the Sharshurais and the Mishpatis, there's certain parts they get a headache. they have no clue what in the world, what's going on over here in the parasha. What are all these things over here discussing? What are they referring to? And there aren't really that many sarim. At least Unkelis gives us a little bit of an idea. The Saved Miramitzan, a fork of gold. Okay, Pasuk Yudalit, next Pasuk. We'll go to the Rashi one more time. You'll see some shows mute, Mishal Stein, Bula Pershah, after the Parasha, Zu Ella Mitzah Srochen, the Parasha Chleshen, Gremelcha Perushan, and the Parasha Chleshen tell us more. Okay, Pasuk Yudalit, Ushte Shar Shiroi Sahav Tahar. Now there were chains coming out of these Mishpitzais that were on the shoulder. Were two chains, one on the left and one on the right, and these two chains on the two shoulders, and they went down to the choshen. Two chains. What material? Ushtei sharshirois zahav tahar, pure gold. And notice again the difference between the different types of gold. When I'm talking about the Mishnah, so it says it's just ordinary gold. Here it says zahav tahar. It was stam gold and it was zahav tahar. Migbolois. Now, what does it mean, migbolois? What does that word mean? It means a gavul. We'll see in a moment. Migbolois, ta'aseh oisa ma'aseh avois. You shall make them. The ma'aseh of avois. What does that mean? We'll see. V'nasata esharashois ha'avois al ha'mishpatis. You shall put the chains that were made in the form of avois on the mishpatis. That is a very, very difficult pasuk. Let's see Rashi. Let's see Rashi first. Then we'll look at the Targum, because it's very, very hard. So Rashi says, what does it mean? Shar shirois means chains. He says it means shal shirois, chains. Okay, shal shirois. Mugbolois. What does it mean? Mugbolois. L'soif gevul hachoshen ta'aseh oisa. So he says a very simple translation. Mugbolois comes from a boundary. You shall put chains extending out of the boundary of the choshen. The choshen was just a breastplate, like they put on the Sefer Torah. It seems like it was a rectangular box. Maybe not. We'll see the dimensions in a moment. No, it was square. It was square. Ravuya kofol, zeres, it was a square. It was a zeres. Okay, zeres, we'll see what that means in a moment. Zeres orko, zeres rachvay. Zeres is the size of a pinky. From the pinky, we have to see exactly what it means. I don't know. But basically, the cheshen was a square. And along the edge of the square, it will now first begin to extend a chain, mugbolois, maasei avois. Now, what does this chain look like? Maasei kliyas chutin, v'loi maasei nikavim ukefolim ka'oisen sha'oisen mugbolois. Not the type of chain that we're familiar with. Chain that they use for pits. I guess what it means, like you want to lower a bucket into a pit, you have a chain. So what does a chain look like? You have round pieces of metal, and each one is interlinked with another one. No, that's not what it looked like. That's not the chain. Not like the sukkah decorations that children make. No, it means it was made kelias woven chutin. It was strands of gold, strands that were braided. Okay, it was like a braid. It was a braided rope. It's more like a rope than we would call a chain. Why then is it called Shaar Shuras? I guess the word Shaar Shuras, Lashon Shalosh. Where's the Lamed? I don't know where the Lamed is. It's Shin Rei Shin. There's no Lamed. Rashi says Shalosh, and he puts a Lamed. Now, the number three is interesting because when you make a braid, you need three. When you have a chain, you don't need three. A chain, the most you'll ever have in contact is two. Two links. You have one link, you have two circles, and somehow you get them, one is within the other. So the connecting point is only two. A braid, each point along its development, is three. So it says here, Shaar Shuras. Somehow the word Shaar Shuras is linked to the word Shalosh. Three. Look, a letter Shin has three heads on top. And when there's three, so the three is going to be... Okay, so there's going to be a chain. So this chain is going to go. It's woven. Okay, maasei kliyas chutin v'loy maasei nikavim negev ukefolim ka'oisim shoisim. And I don't know what that means. A negev means a hole. Like make the eluk oskosh v'nemek le'ar das ka'ois shakarim. I don't know what that means. Okay, v'nasat eshar shoris shel avosis ha'asuyas maasei avos. They will take the chains that were braided, that were made of braids, al mishpitzay salalu. They will put them on top of these mishpitzays. Below hayu elamakam makayim tzavos, below zehu makayim tzavos asiyosam, shol hashar shuras, below tzavos kiviyosam. What it says over here is not discussing the command to make these things. The ain ta'aseh ha'amur kan loshin tzivui. When it says to the word Tasa, you shall make it, there's not a command to actually make it. Later it will be done. These will be needed Titten, you shall put them al hamishpitzos halal. Okay, so saying over here, he said over here, the reason why we're mentioning over here that you shall make these chains. This is going to be repeated a second time. This is an amazing thing. There's no repetition in the Torah, and yet these chains are being taught over here in reference to the ephod, and it's only being mentioned because it's going to be mentioned again later on when we come to the Chayshen. So we just give you some foreshadowing. Okay, so we have, so does Rashi Brown want to tell us in this pasuk? We're going to have over here, we already discussed in the previous aliyah, discussed the ephod. The ephod is a garment that primarily covers the back of the kohen. It was like a vest. It was a vest that had no top, no place for sleeves. And the way it was secured over the back of the kohen. It came around a little bit in the front of the body, and it was shoulder straps. So now we're discussing the shoulder straps. On the top, the end of the shoulder straps, there were these things called mishpitzos. Mishpitzos are settings. And these settings would eventually hold in their place, would hold, secure the Avnei Shoyan, these two very expensive stones, which was etched within the stones, the names of the Shiftei Koh. And these mishpitzos, according to the Targum, were basically some type of gold that had three prongs coming forth. And on these three prongs, you would put the end of a chain. What kind of chain? A chain that extended from the edge of the choshen. And the chain was the chain that was made from pure gold. And this chain wasn't a chain like we have today, like what the children make for the sukkah decorations, and what you use to go secure a ship, or you use the old-fashioned leichters. Not that the nice chandeliers. They used to have chains coming into the socket electricity. We're talking about a chain. It wasn't a real chain. It was something that was braided. It was braided with strands of gold, and the end of this chain was secured in the mishpitzos. And this that we're mentioning, the chain that was made from coming forth from the end of the choshen, that was woven with gold strands and was secured in the mishpitzos. This is not the main place in the Torah where we're discussing this topic. We're only mentioning it over here at Derech Agav, just as an aside, because we want to explain what the purpose of the mishpitzos really are for. They're primarily to secure the chains. That is interesting, because I always thought that the primary purpose of the chains were to secure the Avnei Shoyhan. Seems that Rashi is saying, no, not necessarily. The main purpose of the chains of the mishpitzos is not for the Avnei Shoyhan, but rather it's to secure the chain that extended from the choshen to the shoulders. That was the main point. That's the main purpose. And what is there in the Targum? The Targum says, the Taratein Tikin Didahava. So he learns a chain is called a Tikin. A lot of good vocabulary here today. A lot of good stuff. Tikin means a Tikin Didahav, a chain of gold. Dechei, which is pure. Me Sachamon Saved Yosoin. Now we have to see what that means. I don't know what that means. Ovad Gidilu, it shall be braided. The word Gidilu means braided. Visitin Yos Tikayo Gidilosa Al on Miramitsosa on the fork. Okay, so let's go over here to the mat. So you don't have a read a few slowly, one thing at a time. First, he says the tikin. What does the tikin mean? It means the chains. Okay, it means the chains. Masaklia. And then he says, misachamon. Okay, he translates over here exactly what misachamon is to chum. You see the three letters in the Targum? The three letters are misachamon. Tof, ches, mem, te chum. Like the tchum of Shabbos. What is the Tuchum of Shabbos? It's the Gevul. It's the boundary. So he's saying the same thing that Rashi said. Just like Rashi says, when it says here in the Pasuk, it says, you shall make them, the Sharshois, you shall make, Migbolois. Migbolois comes from the word Gevul. Gevul is a boundary, a Gevul. Lashon Tuchum. The Chaim Perish Rashi, Migbulois, Lashon Givul. Okay, so far so good. Gidilu, Kavanasa, Lashon Kaliyah, it was woven. Chaim Mishnah, Hagoidelis, Meshabis, the word Goidelis means to braid your hair. A woman braiding her hair. Perish, Shakurlas, Sarah Rush, she braids her hair. Okay, so far he really pretty much exactly the Rashi. So we said the time when he says v'sartain tikin de dahava, you show like two chains of gold, dechay of pure gold, me sachamon. Okay, and it should be along the edge, along the tuchum. Taved yosein, you shall make them. Taved yosein, oh, then go. Taved yosein, ovod gidilu. You shall make them in the form of being braided. The sitin yostik, how you put the chains, gidilu sa, these braided chains, al miramit sosa, on the prongs of the pitchfork, which is the mishpitzos. So they're in agreement. They're in agreement over here. Rashi and the Targum simply, at least on the Arrow, very simple level. Chains, what kind of chains? That are braided. Lashon of Gedil. A woman's hair, this braid is called the Gedil. And they were, and the end of these chains were put into the pitchfork. And these chains came forth from the edge of the Choshen. Okay, now let me look over here. What it says over here in the Targum, and then in the other sefer it says Migbolois Nisachamon Loshon Tuchum the Chorash Loshon Gvul Achoshen Tatsasam Masa Elis. Okay, everything over here so far seems over here to be exactly okay. What is interesting though, over here, everything is this Chochma and everything. And that is not a coincidence. They just bring this idea. It brings to mind that I think it was in the previous Aliyah. This always bothered me, and now it bothers me even more. And that is in the previous Rashi. Oh, I don't know if it's Aliyah. It could be it's in before. Okay, it's a very long Rashi, the first Aliyah, and Rashi talks about what is an ephod. Okay, Rashi says, a very fascinating Rashi. Rashi says it's like garment that a woman wears. Okay, Rashi, in fact, it was a Maisa Shahoya, right? Where Rashi, he did not know what an ephod is. And then suddenly he picked up his eyes and there was a woman riding on a horse. And she was wearing a unique type of garment that women wore when they rode a horse. And Rashi felt that it was Bahashkocha Pratis, that right when he was learning this pasuk, Hashem brought him this matzav, he brought him into this place where he should see this woman passing by on a horse wearing this unique garment, that Rashi should understand that the ephod looked just like that garment that this woman was wearing. Case Rashi says over here, which is going to be funny over here. Rashi going back in the previous section, he says,
"Libi oyeli." It's pasuk vav.
Pasuk vav. The asu eso efod. Okay, and Rashi goes, "Kmin efod asui." Go down like two lines in the Rashi. "Kmin sinar shel noshim," like a sinar means an apron. "Shel noshim roichvay susim." Who ride horses. The choyger oiso me achoyrav. It's worn on the back of the body, kineged libo, along the upper chest. Lamata me ne atzila, below the shoulders, me below the elbows. Rochvoy kemidas rechav gaba shal adam yoiser magia ad akevav. It goes all the way down, he says, to the heels. The hacheshav, there's a band, mechubar beroishai. Al pnei rochba v'lo b'machat el masachar. It goes on a little bit more deeply. I'm going to go more details over here now. And it goes. But Rashi says that this garment, he says very clearly, resembles a sinar, an apron that noshim women wore when they rode horses. And that's fascinating. First of all, and again, I told you there's a story that goes along. It's not in the Rashi, but there's a legend. Like I told you. And Rashi was learning this pasuk, and he was troubled as to what exactly it means. And lo and behold, Vayisa in a Vayar, there was a woman going down the street in a horse wearing this garment. And this was a revelation to Rashi. This is really what it means. It was like the story of Chaim Kanievsky, the famous Chaim Kanievsky. He was learning about Shiratzim. the chagav, the arbe, the locust, and he had difficulty understanding what it means. And lo and behold, he picks up his eyes, and there one is right in front of him is the locust that he was, and he was able to analyze and look very carefully at its antennae and analyze. And then he went back to learning, and then it disappeared. And then he realized there was one thing he needed to clarify, and he was upset. And sure enough, it came back. Okay, there's this whole story of Chaim Kanievsky. Well, Rashi is the first one that had this story. Rashi was learning the sugi, and he was, and suddenly this woman passed by wearing this sinar v'nashim. Fine. This is what it says in Rashi. Now, you should know that in the Haredi world, they don't like this story. This is a fact. They don't like it. Why not? Because Rashi would look at a woman. How you talking? The holy Rashi, the Rabban Shel Yisrael, he would look at a woman who's not his wife, not his daughter. He would go look at a woman. How are you talking? Could it be such a thing that Rashi picked up his eyes and he saw a woman that was on a horse, that was galloping on a horse wearing an apron on her back? How are you talking? Can such a thing really be that Rashi would see such a thing, the holy Rashi? Okay, Rashi is not like us. Rashi is a very holy person. So in the Haredi world, they don't like this story. They probably deny the story ever happened. They hold these problems of Baba Maisa. Very little is known to us about Rashi. Rashi is a very mysterious life. We really have no, we know very, very little about Rashi. It's very hard to get a biological sketch of who Rashi was, where he lived, what he did. Okay, we know the basics. He lived in France. He went to learn in Germany. He went back to France. We know that he was 65 years old when he died, at least we think. We know that he lived during the time of the First Crusade, and he had some interaction with the people there, and he made some predictions. But we really don't really know. We have this legend that his mother was almost killed. His mother was almost killed when she was pregnant with him. She was in an alleyway, and there was some type of something coming in the way. A wagon was coming in the way, and she would have been killed, and she miraculously survived. We have a legend about Rashi's father, the diamond, all different stories about Rashi, but it's really a lot of these things that we know about Rashi, they're not factual. They're legend. And when you have legends, you know what happens. It's like telephone. Every generation, the details get distorted and it turns into a bigger Baba Maisa than it was before. But in any event, this source now here. So now this is what now, but the bottom line is whether the legend is true or not. You cannot deny the fact that Rashi explicitly wrote in this parish that the Kohen Gadol wore the dogma of a garment of a woman. So what does that right away bring up in your mind? It's also lo yilbash gever simlas isha. A man should not wear the garment of a woman. How you talking? The holiest Jew in the world is wearing a garment that resembles the levush of a woman. Okay, so if it was one of us, big deal. Come on, it's kinin. It doesn't mean anything. But this is the Kohen Gadol. In the Kodesh HaKadosh, it was the Kohen Gadol. It's a good kash. To make now, right now, learning together, to make the question even worse, what extends from this a braid? And Rashi himself says, what is the word gidul? What is this word? What is the word? It was a voice. So the Targum says the word gidul, which is, and he quotes, they quote the Gemara, which is the same word that is used in the Gemara to describe a woman's hair that is braided. Okay, that's the word. So look at this. The ephod was a garment of a woman, and the chain that secured it in place resembled the hair of a woman that was braided. It says that when Chava was married to Adam, Hashem himself braided her hair. Hashem was her hairdresser. Hashem braided her hair and beautified her for Adam HaRishon. Hashem was megadol. It's a reserved term used for the braiding of hair. So the question, just interesting, is that over here we're dealing over here with the Kohen Gadol, and over here we're dealing over here with a garment of an isha, and we're dealing over here with the hair, a sar bi isha erva. We're dealing over here with something which resembles the hair of a woman, and not only that, we're dealing with a horse. Okay, what a woman wears when she wears a horse. And by the way, that's very interesting because what does it say in the pasuk? Ashula Hashem ki go'oi go'o sus v'roichvoi ramavaya. What was the shira of Devora? What was the shira of Devora? I'm not Devora, I'm in Miriam. It was that one pasuk. The sus v'roichloi ramo v'yam focused on the se'ar, the here, on the horse. And when it comes to here, what does it say about the Mishkan? Chol ishma, with her wisdom, what do they do in honor of the Beis HaMikdash? They spun here. They took the goats, they made the Gedi Izim, they prepared the flax, the wool, and also the goats here, as the goats here, they actually, Rashi says later on, they spun the hair on the back of a living animal. They were experts in preparing the se'or of the goats. I think it was the goat here. In preparing the materials when the animal was alive with chokhmah, which we're not even aware of. So I find it very interesting that when it comes over here to the ephod is a garment of an isha, and the hair is symbolic of a woman's hair. Okay, so it goes to show that Nashim have obviously a very significant chelik in the binyan of the Mishkan. Okay, let's go to the next small process. That concludes, that's it. Okay, so we have two psukim, we have over here two psukim. Two psukim describing the significance of the mishpatzais. We have sisa mishpatzais zahav. There were two chains that were pure gold. Migbolois, extending from the edge of the choyshen. Ta'ase oisam, you shall make these chains, you shall make them ma'ase avois, braided. V'nasata, you shall put as shar shuois ha'avoisais. The chains that were braided of pure gold, by the way, Zahav Tahar, where al hamishbitzois into the prongs of the mishbitzois. It was like a pitchfork. Okay, let's read the next passage. V'yasisa choshen. Now we go to the next part. The choshen. Nusugya. V'yasisa choshen mishpat. A choshen of mishpat. Ma'asei choshev. What does that mean? Ma'asei choshev means it was woven. Ki ma'asei ephod. It had the same type of, it was similar to the ephod. Ta'asei zohov. It says gold. Techeles. V'argamon. V'tolashani. V'sheish moshzor ta'asei oisei. Very complicated. Here there are five items that go into this, five things. There are the three wool, items. Techeles is blue, argamon is purple, talashani is red, and these were dyes of wool. Sheish, moshzor is linen, and in addition, there's gold. Okay, ta'aseh, I say. Let's see, Rashi Yechesh Mishpat. Why is it called Mishpat? It was Mechaper on corrupt judges. Dover Acher Mishpat. Shemavara Dvorah V'Havtochosei Emes. That it itself provided Mishpat. Because on the Choshen was the Urim Bitumim, which caused the stones to light up and gave answers to difficult questions. And whoever got the answer was very happy. Shamishpat mashma gimel shemis divrei ta'ainos ba'alei hadin u'gemar hadin ve'oinish hadin im oinish nisa im oinish makos im oinish mamon v'zem shamish loshem biru devarim. This means clarity. Shemufarish muvarid devarav k'masei ifoid k'masei choshev mechamishas in the five minim like the ifoid as before. But this Rashi here is very, very interesting. Rashi going back says that what does the word mishpat mean? Mishpat is mishamish gimel l'shoines. The arguments of the balei dinim, the decision of the judge, the gemar din, and number three is the punishment. So what's the difference? What's the difference between these three? They're arguments. Reuven and Shimon, they argue. Gemardin. What does it mean? The Gemardin. What does that mean? The Gemardin. The decision. And then there's the punishment.
The verdict.
So the verdict is the punishment. You know, in America, I understand there's a verdict and then there's a punishment phase. In America, if a person is convicted of a crime, they first have to decide is he guilty or innocent. In many cases, many times, the jury only decides innocent or guilty. And then the judge independently decides the punishment. If the jury decides the person is guilty, then the judge, he makes the decision what the punishment should be. The maximum punishment will be, let's say, 20 years behind bars, and the minimum is public service, and the judge will decide. If the jury says innocent, he goes home. If the jury says guilty, it's the discretion of the judge many times to make the decision of what he should get, what the punishment should be. That's how it works most of the time, not all the time in America. But in Judaism, you don't have that principle. In Yadus, there's no jury, it's the Dayanim. And once the din is decided, it's clear cut what the punishment is. If he's guilty, it automatically means it's Nisas Bezdin, or it means it's Makris, or this moment. So I don't know what this means. It means over here the Baladin Gemara didn't. The Zeh, he says over here, it's a fourth translation. Misham is also birda, means clarity. Shemafonis and Mavar Dvar. Okay, I don't know. We have to see more twice later stuff over here. Okay, we'll just continue tomorrow. Okay, thank you all for coming very much.
Thank you, Rabbi. Good night.
Good night. And good night. Good night. Be well. Good night, everyone.
Okay.
Good night.
Good night. Good night. Thank you. Thank you very much. Good night.
Good night, Shkoyach, Hagit Nach.